Good morning. This is AM. I'm Tony Eastley. A former top military officer wants the public to question the work of the Defence Minister, Stephen Smith. A new rift between the Minister and Defence has emerged after Mr. Smith refused to back away from his criticism of the Australian Defence Force Academy's Commandant, Bruce Kafer, over his handling of the so-called Skype sex scandal. Commodore Kafer will return to work this week after being cleared of any wrongdoing by an inquiry. The retired Major General Jim Molan, who was once head of the Academy, says Australians deserve better from the Defence Minister. From Canberra, Samantha Hawley reports.
The Defence Minister wasn't resigning yesterday and he won't be today.
I made a very strong point at the time that I thought it was wrong. I thought it was an error of judgment to bring the character of a potential innocent victim of a sexual abuse, an alleged sexual abuse, into play, and I stand by that.
The Australian Defence Force Academy's Commandant, Bruce Kafer, will return to his job this week after 11 months in limbo. At the time of the so-called Skype affair, Stephen Smith condemned him for taking unrelated disciplinary action against the victim, known as Kate. But an inquiry into Defence's handling of the incident has found Commodore Kafer acted reasonably and made no errors of judgment.
I reckon that we, the Australian public, deserve better than what we saw today. We need a defence minister that can run the department and that is the equivalent of the two men of great integrity and achievement that were standing beside him.
Retired Major General Jim Molan was appalled as he watched the Minister's response at a press conference with the Chief of the Defence Force and the head of the Defence Department.
See him up there, I was so uncomfortable compared to those two men. He continually spoke about holding defence to a higher standard of behaviour than the general population. Well, I believe that applies to him. He should be held to a higher standard as well.
Do you think that Stephen Smith is fit to be the Defence Minister?
I'm not going to make judgments. I'm not going to get into the game of name-calling or anything like that. What I do know...
But you do seem to be making a judgment about Stephen Smith as the
what
Minister.
I'm saying is that every Australian should question Stephen Smith in how he does his job.
Well, you want all Australians to ask the question, and what's your answer to the question, is Stephen Smith doing a good job as Defence Minister?
No, that's not the question I'm interested in. I will take on the Defence Minister on issues, but I'm not going to make some vague generalisation about his fitness to be Defence Minister. That's for the Prime Minister to decide. We'll all make our own judgments privately.
The head of the Defence Force Association, Neil James, says the Defence Minister must now apologise to Commodore Kafer.
I think he made the comments quite deliberately because they'd suited his own political ambitions to make those comments.
Well, what does that mean, though? I mean, suited his own political ambitions?
Well, it's no secret that Stephen Smith hopes to lead the Labor Party at some stage, and this was an issue, particularly for a man reputed not to be popular among female voters, that would make him look good. He appeared to seize his moment and took it.
Well, that's a serious allegation, though, isn't it?
The evidence certainly points that way. I mean, why else would he have acted so strangely at the time?
The head of the Australia Defence Association, Neil James, ending Samantha Hawley's report. It looks like a deal has been stitched up for one of the two most important jobs in the union movement. Dave Oliver heads up the left-wing Australian Manufacturing Workers Union, and he's told AM he wants to be the next secretary of the ACTU, replacing Jeff Lawrence. While the union boss says he's not afraid of a contest, he expects to be unopposed when the position is filled in May. Here's Simon Santo.
Jeff Lawrence says he won't seek another term in one of the most pressured positions in the union movement. Dave Oliver had been rumoured to be planning a coup to take the ACTU secretary job, but now it seems that won't be necessary.
I will be putting myself forward to stand for the position of secretary. I have to say, in the last 24 hours, I have been overwhelmed by messages of support and encouragement from unions right around this country, encouraging me to stand. And so, therefore, I will be proudly putting myself to stand for the position.
The AMWU boss denies he forced the current secretary out.
Oh, certainly not. Jeff Lawrence was very clear on the reasons of why he left. In fact, Jeff, has done the absolute right thing. Jeff couldn't commit to another 3 years. He knows there are going to be significant challenges confronting the movement. And therefore, because he couldn't commit for the 3 years, he's now indicated his intentions that he won't be standing at the upcoming Congress.
Do those challenges require greater sophistication when it comes to communication?
I think it's important that the ACTU becomes a vigorous, high-profile campaigning organisation.
Do you expect to get the job unopposed?
I don't want to be too confident with these things, but I've had enormous support, and I'm very pleased about that.
The former Nurses Union boss, Jed Carney, holds the other senior position in the movement, ACTU president.
This is a democratic movement, and often you have elections, and that's what happens in a democratic movement. So if there is an election, due process will follow. If not, then somebody will be endorsed. That's how it goes. So I just look forward to the process being completed so that we know who finally will take up the position of secretary.
But would that be your preference, to have an election so that there is a contest between at least two strong candidates?
Well, there's various ways that these things can happen. Let's just wait and see what happens.
Dave Oliver says he's proud of his background, a school leaver at 15, then an apprentice, before eventually becoming the National Secretary of the Manufacturing Union. He says he's never lost sight of what's important.
Being a member of a union delivers respect, it can deliver dignity, and delivers rights at work. And that's the thing that makes me so proud to seek this opportunity to represent Australian working people.
Are you going to use this new position to push for changes to the federal IR laws?
Well, there is a process that's underway, and the submissions have been put in from both the business community and the movement. We'll be engaging as part of that process, and we won't be deviating off that, and I see no reason why we would.
And the re-endorsement of Julia Gillard as leader and Prime Minister, that would help, would it not, given that Kevin Rudd was more hostile to many unions?
I'm looking forward to working with the government to make sure the big challenges, the big issues confronting our members, with job insecurity, the impact the high Australian dollar having in sectors right across the economy, whether it's manufacturing, the finance sector, hospitality and tourism, these are the issues that I want every member of parliament every day thinking of when they get out of bed, not thinking about who the next leader of the party is going to be.
I've got to ask you though, Dave Oliver, do you see this as a stepping stone towards entering parliament yourself?
No, I don't see this as a stepping stone as entering parliament.
Is it the death knell of a future political career?
No, look, as I said, I am very proud to be putting myself up for this position. And as I said, I've been overwhelmed by the level of support I've got. And I will be calling on my colleagues. So I've said to a few of them when they've encouraged me to take up this position, it's not me just going in there. Everyone's coming with me.
AMWU National Secretary Dave Oliver ending Simon Santo's report. After a delay of 5 days, Syrian security forces have allowed a team from the Syrian Red Crescent to enter the shattered Homs neighbourhood of Baba Ammar, but they found the normally heavy populated area all but deserted. Meanwhile, opposition groups say troops and tanks are converging on another rebel stronghold in the northwest of the country, which they say will be the next flashpoint. Foreign Affairs Editor Peter Cave reports from our Middle East Bureau.
The green light to allow the humanitarian convoy into Baba Ammar came after the UN's humanitarian chief, Valerie Amos, held talks with the Syrian foreign minister, Walid Mualim. True to their word, the Syrians, who until now had said it was too dangerous, arranged for Baroness Amos and the Red Crescent to enter the neighbourhood. But a spokesman said they'd found it almost deserted.
The team stayed only for around 45 minutes. Volunteers told us later, after they had left, that most inhabitants had left the neighborhood to areas, be it within the city of Homs or outside the city of Homs, such as the village of Abel that we had reached today with the Syrian Red Crescent in order to assist the people. This means that hundreds of families are around in Homs or in other areas.
Red Cross spokesman Hisham Hassan. Opposition groups say the delay has allowed the Syrian forces to remove evidence of their crimes. The UN Special Rapporteur on Torture, Juan Mendez, says that he's ready to refer evidence of torture in Syria to the International Criminal Court.
The information available to me, there's been a pattern of torture and of other crimes amounting to crimes against humanity, and at least in principle there is ample justification for the International Criminal Court to have jurisdiction and to investigate the crimes there. But as you also know, in the case of Syria, that can only happen if the Security Council refers the case to the ICC, which I think should happen. Unfortunately, it hasn't happened yet.
Video footage uploaded to social media sites shows thousands of people on the streets of Idlib in Syria's northwest. They're chanting, "Bashar, you will fall." But according to the Syrian National Council, the country's main opposition alliance, Idlib may be about to suffer the same fate as Babar Amr. They say that a column of 42 tanks and 131 troop carriers have left Latakia on the Mediterranean coast heading for Idlib, which is already coming under bombardment. This is Peter Cave reporting for AM.
You're listening to AM right around Australia, where it's approaching 21 and a half minutes past seven. To the floods, and first to Victoria, where the threat continues for residents of Nathalia, who were woken this morning and told to get out of their houses. Reporter Guy Stainer is there.
At 4:30, residents were phoned and given evacuation orders, which caused a bit of a panic. And it's because of Weir Street, which is where I'm standing now, that water has bubbled up from the drains. It's been an ongoing problem for the last 24 or 48 hours with water coming out from the drains. But the water level from the drains increased dramatically. In fact, where I'm standing a couple of hours ago was actually underwater. So CFA trucks and fire brigade trucks have come in to provide additional pumping services to get the water out. Those fire trucks have now left the area. They say it's under control. There are some concerns about whether or not the SES jumped the gun in terms of giving that evacuation order. Police say they would have preferred to have simply door-knocked the homes along Weir Street, because the concern was really confined to this particular area rather than homes that could be affected if there was a major breach of the temporary levee bank that it does seem to be holding at the moment.
Guy Stainer reporting there. And in a number of areas in New South Wales that are flood affected, residents may not get access to their homes for days. Erin Pogmore is a spokesperson from the New South Wales SES.
We're looking at Forbes still this morning in particular. That township has been cut in three due to the closure of Dowling Street. We are expecting a peak to come through this evening at about 10.65 metres. And there is no further rainfall predicted in that area, which is a good sign for the people of Forbes. We've also got Griffith that has been affected by evacuation orders, and Bilbangra is one of those little areas that's been affected, with about 120 properties that have now been confirmed as inundated with flood water.
How badly affected is that little township?
Well, with those 120 properties, they have been inundated, so there is overflow flooding. Once we start to be able to get back into that area and it is safe, we will be able to get a better understanding of exactly what that impact is going to be.
And the people who were there, where have they gone?
Those people, a lot of them have gone either to the PCYC that was set up as the evacuation centre, or to family and friends.
When we talk about Forbes, the situation there could worsen as the day goes on. There is no rain falling, but you are concerned about the amount of water coming downstream, are you?
That's correct. We still have water feeding in from tributaries, as well as also that overland flooding that's all feeding in together. So we will be keeping a close eye on that. A lot of those tributaries are ungauged areas, so that water won't be able to be measured until it does hit that main catchment.
Have you got any figures on the number of people who have been told to leave their houses around Forbes?
Around Forbes, we're looking at about 84 properties that have been asked to leave. That also includes there's rural properties around there as well that will be affected.
Erin Pogmore from the New South Wales SES. For the moment, businesses and townsfolk in the town of Wagga Wagga are just making do. AM's Bronwyn Hervett is there.
As the flood threat eased in the heart of Wagga, sandbags were set aside and businesses reopened for trade. One local pub was trying to boost community spirits with some flood specials. Owen Lane manages the Victoria Inn.
So we decided to offer $5 meals for the whole of Wagga, considering the flood conditions. And we also offered free accommodation to North Wagga residents. And we've been flat out from the start of service till the finish.
More than 200 meals were served, though the offer was taken up in droves by hungry university students who weren't flood victims. but it was also popular with the people hardest hit. 18-year-old Hayley Crouch has had her home in North Wagga and the homes of her grandparents hit by a wall of water.
We were actually lucky to get everything out of our house except for a few things that weren't really needed. The water's dropped a fair bit at our house, but it's ruined. The water was about a metre and a half through it yesterday and it went up higher and now it's started to drop. So.
And your brother's staying there though?
Yeah, he's got his boat in there and just been staying at the Palm Pond with a few other friends as well as that. So
there's beds at the pub?
Yeah, upstairs. We've got some friends that actually live upstairs in the Palm Pond and they're staying there as well. So then I've just been hopping around to places and just in his boat. So it's pretty sad.
And there's you haven't heard of any looters or anything out there?
No, I've heard rumours about looters and stuff like that, but I've been speaking to Daniel. He hasn't really seen anyone. It's just people start stories and you don't know the truth unless you're actually there.
Wagga resident Hayley Crouch ending Bronwyn Herbert's report, and now 8,000 people in the town have been given the all clear to return to their flooded properties. As part of Adelaide's Fringe Festival, one act which appears in a city park is a case of art stripped bare. Last night, three performers walked naked onto their performance space with nothing. No shelter, no provisions, no objects, and no clothes. The nude trio will stay there for the next 10 days. The audience will be asked to help them survive. Nance Haxton reports.
For performer Kat Henry, the journey of deliverance started months ago as an idea in her lounge room. And now she has just walked naked through Adelaide's Rymal Park to a roped-off area of land about the size of a lounge room that will be her home for the next 10 days.
We're standing here now in the space with an audience in front of us. Some lovely people stepped immediately into the space to give us... We've each got a T-shirt now. I'm holding a lovely Chinese fan in front of myself.
And the bits weren't covered by the shirt.
That's right. Penny's got a tennis ball was given to her by someone and Will's now wearing a pair of underpants.
Is there any sort of performance aspect to it or is it really relying on the interaction of people and what they bring to you?
Sure, it's performative in the sense that it's something that you can witness and it's a visual evolution of an idea. Yeah, it's something that you can witness and be part of that builds.
Well, we've just had some sunburn cream brought over. That was very
and some
nice.
Apple juice. Hurrah.
And some apple juice. Because you don't have food either. I mean,
nothing.
You're going to be sleeping in the open.
We have some apple juice, however. Thank you. I don't know who gave that to us.
The concept has certainly intrigued Adelaide's fringe crowd.
It's terrifying. I can't think of another word.
This is insane and brilliant, and I did hear it. Did hear about it last night over a few drinks. And, you know, you hear about it and you think, oh, yeah, sure. And then you see it. I can't believe it's happening.
The three actors, Kat Henry, William McBride and Penny Harpham, say they needed a challenge, and so Deliverance was born. In the first half hour of the show, they received a parcel delivered to them from friends with a sarong, candles and an iPod to help them pass the time.
We put a postal address on our internet site.
Yep.
And so, of course, it's being live streamed and people can tweet about it and we've got postal addresses. So we're trying to make sure that all our friends from home and different people around the world can interact with it.
They won't leave this space for the entire time, their only concession being to go to a special toilet area. It's not a performance as much as an experiment, as performer Penny Markham explains.
This is the biggest thing we've ever done and we're all so happy and giggly and excited and optimistic. And I think in a piece like that, that's the best headspace to be in.
Do you have any expectations or is that almost the point?
It's totally the point, but I mean it happens. My only expectation is that people respond to it in a really positive way. That they don't look for answers but ask questions, I guess. And we won't have those answers.
Penny Markham, who's got more than her hand out in the park, ending Nance Haxton's report. To the financial markets, and Wall Street is trading higher after more encouraging jobs data in the United States. European stocks also rebounded after yesterday's falls as optimism returned that the bailout package for Greece might actually work. In New York, the Dow Jones is trading up 82 points at the moment, the Nasdaq up 20 points. In London, the FTSE finished the day up 26 points. The dollar is fetching 105.7 US cents. I'm Tony Eastley, that's AM for today.